This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later in the program, we'll be talking about the Human Genome Project. But first, mercury is in the air. Next week, the EPA is scheduled to unveil its industry-backed mercury emissions regulations. But even beforehand, the Government Accountability Office reported that the EPA had a major shortcomings in its analysis of mercury pollution from power plants. All this comes at the same time as a study of mercury levels in the Northeast revealing new and surprising information. The four-year study found high concentrations of mercury in unexpected territory. 10 species of fish had mercury concentrations higher than the EPA's health standard, but the most interesting news was surprising amounts of mercury in forest songbirds. Birds have always been the frontline soldiers, nature's guinea pigs for toxic pollution. From the canary in the coal mine to Rachel Carson's DDT-plagued birds in Silent Spring, could birds one more time be telling us about the dangers of another invisible menace? The findings will be published in the April issue of the peer-reviewed journal Ecotoxicology. Joining me now to talk about this study is the paper's lead author, Dr. David Evers. Dr. Evers is the executive director of the Biodiversity Research Institute in Gorham, Maine. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yes, thank you very much. Good to be here.
Thank you. You found high concentrations of mercury in 9 biological hotspots. Could you tell us where they were?
Yes, the biological hotspots were identified through fish and wildlife indicators, and those hotspots are spread out across New England and eastern Canada. And there's a few spots that are near local emission sources, and there's several spots that are not near local emission sources.
When you say not near, where is the mercury coming from?
Well, the mercury is coming from in the Northeast. The Northeast is creating its own problem in a small way, and probably in a larger way, mercury is coming into the region from the other regions nearby, as well as the global pool of mercury.
Mm-hmm. Now, the most surprising finding of your study, if I'm reading it correctly, is not that you found that the mercury was in fish and animals that eat fish, but that they were in the birds that have never go anywhere near any of these fish.
Yeah, I think we're all well aware that mercury is a problem. It's in the environment, and aquatic systems are the place that we have focused on. But what some of the findings from a couple of the papers have shown is that mercury deposition in forested landscapes is much higher than what was previously predicted. There's a model by Dr. Eric Miller that's shown using wet and dry deposition, we see far more mercury in the landscape than we once thought. And when we look in the landscape and try to find, does that make a difference in species of wildlife, such as birds, we find that in a certain species of thrush that's endemic to the mountaintops of the Northeast, the Bicknell's thrush, we find levels that are much higher than we ever would have predicted.
How much higher? Give us an idea of how much higher they are and whether they're above any kind of standard.
Yeah, I think it's a good question of do those levels really make a difference? We find that the levels are, I would say, at least 3, 4, or 5 times higher. They really haven't been looked at before, so it's hard to say what they should have been, but the conventional thinking is that there really should be very, very little methylmercury available to these birds that are in these forested landscapes. And how much is too much for these thrushes is still the sort of research that we still need to do.
And would it be fair to assume that the mercury comes from coal-fired power plants?
I think that's a tough question on where the mercury is coming from. We know that coal-fired power plants are a major source of mercury emissions in the environment, just as incinerators were. In the Northeast, a lot of those incinerator emissions have been lowered tremendously.
Mm-hmm. Would it be wrong to assume that if the birds are eating bugs that are eating the leaves of green plants, might we humans not be also eating mercury on our green leafy vegetables, or cows eating the mercury on the grass, we're drinking their milk, eating their meat? I mean, could it be seeping into groundwater or well water? Could we be ingesting it also?
Well, I don't think we're at that sort of crisis level. I think the finding shows that methylmercury is available in these terrestrial systems. And in the food chain length means everything. The food chain length in the aquatic systems is well known as a place that methylmercury can build up or biomagnify through the food web to cause problems. And what we're finding now is that same methylmercury can biomagnify and increase in the food web in an insect-eating pathway as well. So I think we still need to think of it that way. Just if we ate the leaves or we had cows that ate those leaves, we would not have that food chain pathway that builds up the mercury.
Hmm. Not even them eating grass, grazing on the grass, where the mercury is. We would assume it's falling on the grass too, would we not, if it's on the leaves?
We would, but the levels don't have the ability to biomagnify into a point where there could be problems. So unless we're eating insects that are eating insects that are eating insects, right, I think we're still okay.
Why is this an important time for mercury regulations?
I think this is an important time for mercury regulations just because mercury is a problem in the environment still. There's great news out there in that mercury levels have declined in the Northeast. But when we look at sediment cores in lakes and we compare our historical loads of mercury in the Northeast, we're still four times greater in the mercury in our environment in the Northeast.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. We're talking with Dr. David Evers, Executive Director of the Biodiversity Research Institute in Gorham, Maine. We're waiting for the EPA to come out with mercury standards next week, correct?
Yes, we are.
What do you expect? Do you have any idea what they may be?
I don't have a good idea. As a scientist, I'm more interested in providing the information that other people can use to make those sort of decisions.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey Homestead of the EPA is quoted in the New York Times today is saying that these new standards coming out next week will lead to air being, quote, cleaner than any time since we started measuring it 3 decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound like good news to you?
Well, it sounds like very good news to me. I hope that that's the case, and I think the more mercury we can take out of the atmosphere, the less that we'll have in our environment, and the safer that we'll have better ecological health as well as human health.
Let's see if we can go to the phones. 1-800-989-8255 is our number, and let's see if we can get the phone system working here today. Let's see if we can, well, it's not quite up to par today, so I'll see if we can get it to go. Well, until then, let me continue with our conversation. Do you think that why do you think it was this one bird, the forest-dwelling bicknell thrush, that you think is so high in mercury levels?
Well, I think the bicknell thrush is, again, just an indicator of what's going on with the methylmercury cycle in mountaintops. I think mountaintops are special or unique habitats where atmospheric deposition has been modeled to be much higher than, let's say, the valleys, and that the special features are coniferous forests. There are thin soils that are acidic soils, and those acidic soils are very good habitat for the bacteria that need to convert the inorganic mercury to a methyl form, and that methyl form is what gets into the birds. So I think there's special features in those mountaintops, and there's other species of birds that could have high levels as well, but we focused on that one thrush.
Mm-hmm. And what do they eat? What kind of bugs are concentrating the mercury?
Well, I think any insect will concentrate that mercury, and the important part is that the thrushes are eating insects that are probably in a higher trophic level than, let's say, other songbirds. We did compare our thrush mercury levels with other songbirds. We indeed did find that the thrushes were the highest blood mercury levels versus four or five other species.
Mm-hmm. Lisa in Truckee, California. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, thank you.
Hi.
I think that this issue of atmospheric deposition is pretty important because I published a paper along with some colleagues back in the late 90s showing biomagnification in an Arctic marine food web. And we found mercury in everything from clams and invertebrates to birds, fish, mammals. And so, you know, it was being found. There were no point sources up there. It was all coming, we assume, from atmospheric deposition because there were no other sources that we could find up there.
So you're saying mercury's in the air everywhere?
Yeah, even as far up north as beyond the Arctic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, and that's a very good point, and that's a very good indicator of the global pool of mercury because it is a fairly pure signal from that global pool. There aren't any local emission sources to provide that mercury in that landscape there.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255 is the number. Do you think that are you going to be studying other animals that don't eat, you know, that don't swim or eat fish for signs of mercury?
Yes, there's a new project that I'm leading that is looking into this very phenomenon and looking also at how acid rain interacts with the mercury deposition and availability in these mountaintops. These mountaintops appear to be very sensitive habitats to acid rain and mercury deposition, and we combine the two, we might have thrushes and other songbirds that might be impacted by not just methylmercury in their diet, but also in the loss of calcium in their diet because calcium is taken out of these soils when there's high acidity.
So you've got a double whammy here. You've got the acid rain, and you've got the mercury now coming in.
That's exactly how I think of it. It's a double whammy that may be impacting these forest songbirds, especially in the mountaintop regions, in a way that could have long-lasting implications.
Well, what was your reaction when you saw the mercury in the birds? Were you looking for it in the birds and say, hey, they must be having mercury too?
Well, it was a very surprising finding. I was very interested in looking at mercury in a lot of different birds to try to find out, are there areas that are hidden from the general conventional thinking? And looking at Bicknell's thrush 4 years ago, we just caught 3 birds on a mountaintop in Maine and found that, indeed, they had blood mercury levels that were much, much higher than I would have expected, especially compared to other songbirds that we caught in other areas.
So did you think that they were out of the ordinary or something, and maybe, you know, other places wouldn't show as much mercury?
Well, that was my curiosity, and I think our group paired up or partnered up with Vermont Institute of Natural Science, and their leader, their science leader, Chris Rimmer, works on Bicknell's thrush, and he is expert with that species, and we work together to gather Bicknell thrush blood mercury levels across New England, New York, and eastern Canada.
Is the mercury high enough so it affects the flight or the bird's personality, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that's still an outstanding question that we're not quite sure of. Is the mercury too much for those birds? The mercury levels that are too high for fish-eating birds, we're just now getting a handle on that. The mercury levels that are too high for insect-eating birds is really relatively unknown. Not all birds are created alike, so we need to think that way and think that some species are more sensitive than others.
Well, David Evers, thank you for taking time to talk with us. We'll be following the studies. Very interesting.
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Executive Director David Evers is of the Biodiversity Research Institute in Gorham, Maine. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about the Human Genome Project. You know, there was a lot of excitement about it when the genome was deciphered. Now we're down the road a bit. Is it working out the way we thought? Or where are all those cures and treatments we thought that would come out of deciphering the human genome? We'll talk about it. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.